Number 5B.
In principle, we have seen that it has been put under investigation, scientific investigation, and so we have here principle. The assertions of animal magnetism do not stand up to scientific investigation. There is no science behind animal magnetism, no true science behind animal magnetism. Then life. She goes on and says, now what are my experiments, what is my observation on it? And she says that the influence of animal magnetism is never constructive. It has a destructive effect. Can you hear life, the counterfeit of life? It's destructive, not constructive. Upon those who practice it and upon their subject, who do not resist it. So upon practitioner and patient, both have, on both, it has a derogatory effect. Therefore, she has to defend that against the sense testimony that says, but these people do heal. They heal with mesmerism and with manipulation. So she says, yes. But that is only a seeming healing. The seemingly alleviating and healing effect of animal magnetism are deceptive. They are the effects of illusion. It's one greater error controlling the lesser error, so it's the effect of illusion. It's not a true healing effect. Therefore, as love, as she says, therefore the seeming benefit we get of it, now comes the benefit, the reward, therefore the seeming benefit derived from animal magnetism in proportion to the belief into esoteric magic. The more we believe in magic like the exorcists, although the exorcists that really practice magic and call down Jesus or the devil according to the situation, they use that esoteric magic. Just as in older ages, in primitive ages, which were perhaps not so primitive as we think they were using mental powers in order to arrange their whole life. Before they went on hunting their animals and so on, they were first performing mental magic in order to be led rightly and so on. So this is the whole story of animal magnetism from the point of view of mind, showing that that which is contrary to the divine mind is actually only something that has to do with illusion. Now, this is now what has been treated in the by Mrs. Eddy in the first edition. I'll come back to the first edition. But if we compare what she has written in 16 pages, in the third edition, is now dealt with on a page and a half, so to say, and even that is too much. She could have dealt with it even in a shorter text without leaving out something. But her main accent here is on that so-called transference of mortal thought to a patient for the sake of healing or for the sake of really harming him, and that was the only thing that was in the first edition in Science and Health on animal magnetism. It was all about how really one person can influence through mental means another purpose. That tone of influence stands out, the tone of observation and investigation stands out, that you said the community should be really informed about it, they should be told about it, so that they are not ignorant about it. That whole first edition is all about the tone of mind, and nothing else. So can you see what happened in between? There she took all that, those question of animal magnetism, how thought transference takes place, how it is done in secrecy, how it is difficult to find out really who is the malpractitioner, that there is a mental realm within which there is influence and transference of influence going on. And now she lifts it right out of that sense and says, from the point of view of mind, all that is just an illusion. You don't have to know more about that, but that it is all resting on illusion because it goes out from the imagination of the human mind, from the thought of human mind. Can you see what I mean by comparing really the editions with the subject? Because the subjects now in the textbook are all from that higher standpoint of going out from God, from truth and love, and saying what that animal magnetism is actually delusive. She didn't say that in the first edition, that it's delusive. She took it as really something very serious and not as nothing. Here she takes it as nothing. We go to the next subject on spirit, and it is a very short subject of only half a page. And we see at once here again that that subject is different than the first subject. Now it's all a question of the question of the allness of God, the reality of God's spirit. Our epitome reads, animal magnetism is a mere negation of the allness of the one God spirit. So here, can you hear here now? She goes out from God and says, God is spirit. We know that from God, spirit is that which says, I'm the only and I'm the one and only. There is nothing besides me. And if you compare that with those 16 pages in the second edition of Science and Health, where she took in those 16 pages a great pain to explain that we should distinguish between metaphysics and mesmerism, that we should make, that should see that they are opposite, that and therefore to take the right side. All this is now no more in the text because it says, I'm not going to make really a distinction between mesmerism and metaphysics, because there is anyway only one thing, namely only spirit. And you hear now the tone going right through that says, as there is only one spirit, therefore animal magnetism is not real. It has nothing in that one and only spirit. Quite a higher standpoint. Let's see how she shows that. She gives it through three subtones, namely, animal magnetism has no scientific foundation, for God governs all and is real, harmonious and eternal. Can you see, there is only one thing, because God alone is real, harmonious and eternal, and his power is neither animal nor human. Again, saying, in God's universe, from God's standpoint, you don't have anything animal or human. That doesn't come up with that question. Its basis being a belief, and this belief animal. In science, animal magnetism, also mesmerism or hypnotism, is a mere negation. You see, she doesn't say, well, you have to be very careful to distinguish what is mesmerism and what is metaphysics. She says, no, there's only one thing. Therefore, everything that does not coincide with the one spirit is any way not reality, has no reality, and in sense is an unreal concept of the so-called mortal mind. You hear constantly real and unreal because spirit is the only. So we have here that there is only one basis, and that basis is mind. Therefore, there can be no other basis, namely the basis of mortal mind. Then she comes to the core of it, spirit to spirit. There is but one real attraction. Attraction is the belief of animal magnetism. Here she says, there is but one real. So why bother about something else? There's but one real attraction, that of spirit. The pointing of the needle to the pole symbolizes this all-embracing power of the attraction of God, divine mind. She shows here that the fact about animal magnetism she has brought out is the divine mind. There is only one mind that has any influence, and that mind is the only mind, it is spirit. There is no other mind, there is no other spirit. Therefore, why bother about animal magnetism? Animal magnetism is therefore not real, it is therefore unreal. The tone of soul comes in. The planets have no more power over man than over his maker, since God governs the universe. You see, the thesis of Mesmer was that the planets have power over animated things, over plants and people, that they have power over it. But he said they have no more power over man than over his maker, because above the planets is the maker of the planets. And the planets have no power over something that is above the planets, over his maker, since God governs the universe. But man, reflecting God's power, has therefore dominion over all the earth and its hosts. Now here again, from the point of view of spirit, we can see that spirit is always superior to everything. Soul is superior. It's always above. You have always that above sense over man, over his maker, over all the earth. So you get the sense of soul coming in, which says, if we go out really from science, from spirit, then that spirit is always over everything. And we don't have to care what is below it, because it's over it and takes care of everything anyway. So we have a terrific sense here that is going out from spirit and says, if I go out from spirit and have that consciousness really of the 6,000 and 7,000 year period, go out from spirit and see only spirit and see that the only attraction is mind, therefore that mind, that attraction is the only attraction, so God is the only attraction, that spirit is the only attraction, and that attraction is over everything and has dominion over everything. So I'm no more going right down to that level where she was when she wrote the second Noah's Ark edition, where she constantly was struggling and fighting against and error fighting against, good fighting against, evil, and so on, making a distinction, how to protect yourself. All that is wiped out here. Can you see, practically nothing that is now in the final edition was in the second edition. Practically nothing. Only the tonality is there, but on a very low level, on a level of metaphysics. That was in the second main edition. And now she has lifted up, that's why I said we have to keep in our spiritual consciousness the level of truth and love, truth that says everything is okay already, and love says, and this has been from time immemorial so, because it's the only thing that is ever going on. Love, God is all, and everything else is nothing. So if we go out from that point of truth and love in the background, then we see that that truth and love operates as spirit and says, all right, then also on the level of spirit, spirit is all, spirit is the real, there is nothing can be real that is the opposite of spirit, because there is no opposite. Yeah? Can you catch the tone of it? The very high tone from which she speaks. From which she handles such a subject. What has happened with all those 16 pages of the second edition? She used their 16 pages to explain what animal magnetism is, and now she brings it right back to half a page. Why can she do that? Because the moment we go down on the human plane, on the erroneous plane, then everything doesn't fit together, then it is one big chaos, and one doesn't really know what is going on, and so you have to use a lot of words to defend a proposition. Whereas if one goes out from the high standpoint of God, then everything falls easily into place and becomes so simple, becomes very simple. So all that discussion that she had there in Noah's Ark edition, in that period of the floods and so on, where everything was upside down. When she printed the textbook, she had to print with it also an errata page, a whole page of erratas, because there were so many mistakes in that volume, in that thin volume. I can see something had moved there, and she was really like a cork on the waters, and she had to find a firm standpoint, and to find that firm standpoint took her over 35 years. Well, that is a comfort for us, if it takes also some time for us to find solid ground under our feet, that we can't do that just overnight. We go on to the next subject of soul. Again, it is a subject that she deals with, and she needs not quite one page, but the third main edition had 45 or 46 pages, so it is reduced considerably. And you remember what was the third edition? Namely, it had all to do with those criminal stories that she experienced, and had to deal with malicious, mostly malicious animal magnetism. Here, also, she has to take up that subject of malicious animal magnetism, but can deal with it in a much more concise way. Let's see what she says here. Or let's first read our epitome so that we know what is the main point. Through spiritual understanding, we can free ourselves from the mental despotism of animal magnetism. So as I said, our solution is for all that malicious, hidden, brutal animal magnetism, all the tricks of animal magnetism, we can deal with that very easily. We only must have the standpoint of God, soul. If we have the standpoint of soul, we have spiritual understanding, and with that soul sense and with that spiritual understanding, we can easily deal with malicious animal magnetism. We don't have to fear it. How does she explain it? She said, yes, the mild forms of animal magnetism are disappearing. And it's true that its aggressive features are coming to the front, that the looms of crime hidden in the dark recess of mortal thought are every hour weaving webs more complicated and more subtle. You hear really the nature of malicious animal magnetism coming through these terms. So secret are the present methods of animal magnetism that they ensnare the age into indolence and produce the very apathy on the subject which the criminal desires. So this is an introduction into the malicious animal magnetism. Here again, she says, it's true, it becomes more and more subtle, and we know that in the world, animal magnetism and evil becomes more and more subtle, more and more hidden. It's no more on the surface. It's all hidden away. In general, the people don't know what is going on behind the scenes. They can't see everything. They are not informed properly, or they are disinformed properly, if you want to say it that way. So that's the hidden, she has here, the hidden agents as a side note. And she said, what is that? What is really going on? Namely, she said that we have here the epitome, soulless mind, that the aggressive features of animal magnetism try to exercise their influence in secret by producing indolence and apathy. So it is showing that animal magnetism tries to work as an influence to the point that it not only harms people, but something which is much worse, that it makes people bring them into a state where they are no more interested in what's going on, so that error can do with them whatever error wants to do, into apathy. That people become apathetical because they don't believe anymore the news and the governments and the friends and so on. They just don't believe it anymore. So there is a possibility, really, either to wake up or to really produce the very apathy on the subject which the criminal desires. Having stated that it is actually a mental influence that is at work, she goes on and says, the following is an extract from the Boston Herald. Mesmerism is a problem not lending itself to an easy explanation and development. So they also accepted that it is not quite an easy question that you can see easily through it. It implies the exercise of despotic control. Again, you have despotic control, the counterfeit of soul, the soul of freedom. The very counterfeit is that despotism. And it's much more likely to be abused, can you see, by its possessor than otherwise employed for the individual or society. So she analyzes it further and says, this malicious animal magnetism is usually used for evil and not for good. So you have a tone of spirit in it, because spirit is good and is only good and cannot be misused for evil. So animal magnetism tries to misuse it for evil. We go further and begin to see something about soul as soul. Namely, mankind must learn that evil is not power. It's so-called despotism. See, she goes further. The paragraph before was speaking about despotic control. So now she takes up that question of despotic control and said, it's so-called despotism is but the phase of nothingness. See, this is new. The third main edition would not say that this malicious animal magnetism is nothing. Says, so you have to be careful about it and you have to protect yourself. It's a very strong influence and it can trick you out in all kinds of ways and means. She says, Christian Science despoils the kingdom of evil and preeminently promotes affection and virtue in families and therefore in the community. So we have now quite a different concept that she didn't say in the third main edition. The Apostle Paul refers to the personification of evil as the God of this world. That's the counterfeit of soul, the God of this world. And further defines it as dishonesty and craftiness. Again, craftiness, the maliciousness, the counterfeit of soul. Therefore, sin was the Assyrian moon god. So she brings up that mental despotism as a phase of sin. She still hasn't dealt with it yet, how to deal with that aspect. So further, we get the tone of principle in it, the destruction of the claims of mortal mind through science. You hear at once principle that works through science, by which man can escape from sins and mortality. You see, now she gives the way how to escape from all this despotism, from all this maliciousness, from all this secretness. She says there is only one way to escape, and that is through science. Huh? That's through science by which man can escape from sin and mortality, and that blesses the whole human family. So instead of having that curse of soul, we have the blessing of soul. So science or soul as principle says that science can only bless us. That if we take the standpoint of science, that then this will bless the whole human family. Then the tone of life in it, namely, as in the beginning, however, this liberation does not scientifically show itself in a knowledge of both good and evil, for the latter is unreal. So she gives another tone and says, yes, that was the claim right from the beginning in the second record of creation, that there was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which replaced, really, the tree of life, because both trees were in the midst of the garden. They had the same place. The actually materially they can't take the same place, but as a symbol they take the same place, which says you can either look at it this way or that way. The same thing can be looked at in two different ways. You can look at the same at malicious animal magnetism from the point of view of mortal mind, then you get all the despotism of the senses. You can look at the very same thing at sin and see, instead of the tree of good and evil, you can see the tree of life. And then when you look at it from that way, then you have that which is was eternally so, as in the beginning, as from the beginning. That tree of knowledge of good and evil was unreal. So we get here an answer to this very difficult question that she was laboring on in the third main edition of Soul against demonology. That was the first time she called then the chapter demonology. Here we have it again. She takes up that demonology, that despotic control, that sin that is the Assyrian moon god, that Apostle Paul refers to the personification as the god of this world. You can see a counterfeit sense of the one god was under consideration. So how to deal with it? And she says, well, you can only deal with it through science. Through science you can escape everything. She doesn't have to give many rules or bylaws or indication what to do. She just says, if you change your standpoint to the standpoint of science and leave metaphysics behind, then you are not going to quarrel with evil and with the malpractitioner and with malpractice. You just leave it because it's anyway not real. But only then it is not real to you if you take the standpoint of science. If you don't take the standpoint of science, you will be the victim of malicious animal magnetism. That's the third subject. All right, we will go on this afternoon.